values, the cultures, and the rights of Indigenous people. That's our focus today. Welcome. Glad you're a part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Hope you had a nice weekend. If you'd like to join in the conversation today, now would be a good time for you to send in your comments or your questions. You can do it by email. We're at TFS at WSHU.org. Or you can go to our Twitter page. We're at Full Story WSHU. And of course, you can always leave us a voicemail at 833-CALL-TFS. But if you're like me and if you prefer numbers, that's 833-225-5837. Three guests for you today. In just a bit, we're going to speak with Lance Gumbs. Lance is a tribal trustee for the Shinnecock Indian Nation and vice president of the National Congress on American Indians. Harry Walls, Chief Walls, is chief of the Okeechobee Indian Nation. And Shane Weeks is a member of the Shinnecock Indian Nation and founder of Indigenous International. Shane and the chief are joining us from our studio in Stony Brook. Shane, I'm going to start with you. How are you? Welcome to our program.
Pretty good, thank you.
Could you give us a little background? Tell us about the reservation. Where is it? How many people live there? What's it like?
Sure. First of all, I'd just like to introduce myself properly in my Indigenous language. Kwe Wenekisuk, Bijikinabawat, Adasawis, Bijikiyandodam, Sinakognawuchi, and Anishinaabeninu. Hello, good day. My name is Standing Buffalo. I am of the Buffalo Clan. I'm an Anishinaabe man from Shinnecock. And Shinnecock is located in what is now Southampton Town on the east end of Long Island. And we have about 1,000 acres in budding the village of Southampton and another 90 acres in Hampton Bay is a little further west. Right now, we currently have about 1,700 people on enrollment and about 700 people that actually live on the reservation. Our current residential area is the one closest to Southampton Village, and we are on a peninsula, meaning, you know, we have water surrounding on three sides. So a lot of our culture and our history and our lifestyles are based around that water.
How long have you been there?
I've been living there my whole life.
And how long has the reservation been there?
Parts of the reservation was established in the mid-1700s. Our territory traditionally and historically encompassed all of Southampton Town. And little by little, it was taken away from us. The reservation originally went from Hampton Bays all the way to the village, from north to south. And through a series of unfortunate events, we're now left with just a little under 1,000 acres. But it's been there. We've been on Long Island for about 14,000 years, and the reservation was created in the mid-1700s and was broken down from that time till now.
And looking at a map the other day, the Shinnecocks were a good chunk of New England. They had moved to different parts of New England, right? I believe Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island.
We were part of a sort of confederacy that encompassed most of the New England area. And there's a myth that we talk about called the 13 Tribes of Long Island, where they kind of described us as separate nations across Long Island. There were four of them on the two forks, the Shinnecocks, the Montaukets on the South Fork, the Manhassets on Shelter Island, and the Courtaugs on the North Fork. But we were really all one people, and that were just separated by family or by our location. In Rhode Island, you had the Narragansetts. In Massachusetts, you had the Massachusetts, the Wampanoags, Aquinna. In Connecticut, you had the Mohegans and the Pequot, Mashantucket Pequots. Just west of Shinnecock, you had the Unkichug, and there were other tribes further west. But we were all pretty much one people, right? So you could say, you know, we were up north in Connecticut, New England, you know, that area. But there's different sub-tribes that we were a part of. Kinship, exactly, kinship.
And you know that there's some listeners right now, as you were running down those names, they were probably saying, I never knew where that name came from.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the names across Long Island are our words, or names for the people that lived there. You had Setauket, you had the Massapequas.
The Manhassets,
right? Matinecock. And a lot of those places, Ronkonkoma, Rockaway, those were all different people, different what they called tribes or sub-tribes. And a lot of the words that you see along, you know, street signs or place names are words traditional to our culture, you know, our words for those places historically.
Chief, I know you're there. I just want to talk with Shane for a few more moments, and then we'll take a break, and then we're going to bring you in. Shane, how would you describe your relations with others, with non-tribal members who live on Long Island?
You know, I have to say that my relations with people on Long Island have been good in recent years. I do see a lot of people opening up to wanting to learn who we are as a people, and which hasn't always been the case. You know, for example, this radio show right now, you know, is a chance, an opportunity for us to tell people who we are, who probably have no idea, you know, because it's not something that's public knowledge. It's not something that's taught to the mainstream public, you know, who we are as a people. It's not in history books. It's not something I learned in high school, you know. So I think the relations are getting better and people are opening up to who we are and understanding who we are.
And please take this in the way it's intended. It's not offensive. I would guess there are so many people who probably never even heard of you or the tribe or the reservation.
Right. You know, there's people in Southampton town that have never heard of us. You know, I meet people quite often that had no idea that there was a reservation right there in Southampton.
So what's their reaction when they find out that this is, are they fascinated? Do they want to learn? Because I know so many kids nowadays who are just fascinated by the culture and what happened so many years ago before it became the United States. And if you teach them starting as kids, you could see their eyes opening wide and they just want to get this. They want the knowledge.
Yeah, that's the exact reaction I usually get. You know, people are very fascinated and do want to know more. You know, I try and invite them to our powwow where they can learn more about our culture, which is on Labor Day weekend. And that is quite often the reaction that I see.
What is it that, in the short time that we have left in this segment, what would you like those who are listening who don't know about the Shinnecocks, what would you like us to know about your culture and history that we don't know?
We were very much involved in the creation of the United States. We were the people that taught the colonists how to whale, amongst other tribes in New England. We had a very huge impact on how the colonists survived, showing them how to farm and live off the land. Even through enslavement, we were still on every single whaling boat that went out there during that Industrial Revolution, during the whaling times. And today, you know, I'd like people to know that we are still here, right? You know, that we're still here and we have our own story to tell, and we can tell our own story. You know, it's not very often that you find documents of us telling our own story. It's usually somebody telling our story for us and what they think they saw. So it's very important for us now to be able to tell our own story to the people.
Now you work on or with Indigenous International, is that correct?
Yes, that's a project that I created, which is based around the fact that through my travels across the world, across the United States, that I have found a lot of similarities within Indigenous cultures all over the world, right? And those similarities, I realize, you know, is something, again, not many people know. And that's something I'd like to bring to light, you know, that the kind of slogan is we are one people, and showing that there are many connections that go far, far back in history and can still be found today.
It's so when you get down to the core of it, like they always say, just a few degrees of separation, right?
Right.
You travel a lot for Indigenous International?
Well, I started it in February. So I've been to Guatemala and Colombia before that. But before that, throughout my whole life, I've traveled all across North America to different tribes, different reservations, pretty much doing the same thing, but without documenting it. and noticing all of those connections across the country, across North America. And so that's what kind of sparked the idea behind Indigenous International.
And are you having others now join Indigenous International?
Yeah, well, the idea behind it is to go to these Indigenous communities and team up with somebody there and kind of do a story, either through film, through talk, through some kind of artwork, and just kind of focus on those connections, those similarities. So throughout the whole project, there will be many people to collaborate with as it goes along.
Shane, just one last question for you before I'm going to turn it over to the gentleman who's sitting right next to you.
Sure.
The internet, reaching out to others nowadays and teaching them about the Shinnecocks, finding out about others around the globe, how has that transformed what you're doing?
I think that the internet is a great tool for people to instantly connect with people across the world. And I think it has greatly influenced how people understand Native Americans, how our indigenous people understand each other. And it's a very good tool if it's used in a good way, I think.
In a proper way, right?
Exactly, right.
Chief Wallace, you're a very patient man. Thank you for your time. How are you?
That's the first. I'm fine. Thank you very much.
You've never been called patient before, huh? Well, you
you have to learn patience. It's a learned process.
Trust me, it takes decades, right?
Yes, it does.
Thanks for your time today. First, how are you?
I am well. And I'd like to introduce myself in my language as well. Kwe ni tapia, greetings my friends and relatives. My name is Harry Wallace, Iasunakwak in my language, and I am a Madewan man. I'm a Turtle Clan. I'm a member of the Unkachog Nation, and Puspatuk Natap. I live on the Puspatuk Reservation on Long Island.
Okay, so you live on the reservation. How big is the reservation?
We call that a military secret, but it's right on the Forge River. It's it's less than 100 acres on the Forge River.
Well, that wasn't
on the southern shore.
Chief, that wasn't much of a secret there. I'm not going to trust you with the combination for the crown jewels now.
Well, they won't either. Yeah.
Chief, how many Unkachogs are there?
We have about 400 enrolled members at the moment.
400. And at its largest, how many members at one time or another were there in the Unkachogs?
Well, when you say the numbers, you have to refer to the fact that the entire island of what they call Montauk, the entire island was represented by our kin. So that number is entire North America's estimates from being 20 and 50 million people. So
wow.
Long Island itself, we've been there since, as my old cousin used to say, we've been here since the ice receded. So the population, and when the explorers first came along shore, they would look and they would see fires for as far as the eye could see, and those fires represented villages and communities and people. So the entire population, as far as we're concerned, is quite sizable, quite considerable.
Chief, when I was speaking with Shane a little bit earlier, and I made the comment, and I think it's somewhat accurate. I think so many of us who live around here, when you hear the names and you hear the history and so on, I think a lot of us simply don't know the background.
The background is that we are shore people. We are people of the shore. We are indigenous. We say we're native to this land. We're a part of this land. When this land was created, we were created along with it. And our... we've still been here. We've been here since the beginning of time, and we haven't left. And that's the key to our continued survival, that we're able to learn the methods that it takes for us to survive and endure all of the various problems that have occurred as a result of contact. And that includes disease, that includes war, that includes overpopulation, that includes taking of land, the improper taking of land. Includes all those things, we were able to endure and survive through that entire onslaught of quote unquote, European contact. So we will continue to live here. If we were able to survive, we are the survivors of that onslaught, and we continue to live here and we'll continue to thrive and find methods to ensure our survival into the next future generations.
Chief Harry Wallace is the chief of the Yonkachuk Indian Nation, and he's joining us from our studio in Stony Brook. Also joining us in a few moments is going to be Lance Gumbs, and Lance is a tribal trustee for the Shinnecock Indian Nation and vice president of the National Congress on American Indians. But Chief Wallace, I'd like to continue with you for just a moment. Again, for background, for those of us who don't know a lot about the Yonkachugs, and I apologize if I don't have the proper information, you were recognized by New York State, right?
Well, according to case law, we there was never any. New York State could not recognize us because we were there before them, and our treaties were the colonies of Holland and England. And New York State had no choice but to acknowledge. And the same thing occurs with the United States. The difference between us and the process of so-called federal recognition, which is a more recent construct, we're not eligible for the funds that are provided by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. But under federal Indian law, federal common law, the Yonkachug Nation are recognized nation under federal common law, and that recognition has never been extinguished, expunged, or abrogated by Congress or anyone else. So as far as we're concerned, our recognition is as foundationally as solid as any other nation in this in North America.
So if I understand this correctly, you believe that you are recognized by the federal government in everything but actual a document, but you're saying it exists.
Well, what I'm saying is that the Bureau of Indian Affairs is the agency, federal agency, that provides funding to those agencies, and they have a list of those, and we're not on that list. But insofar as the nation's sovereignty and the nation's existence is concerned, we have the same capability of maintaining our sovereignty as any other nation in this country and in North America.
What would you like, for those, again, who may not know about the Yonkachugs, what would you like us to know about the Yonkachugs, your culture, your history?
Well, again, as I say with Shane, we are related by all the other nations on Long Island, but as a result of kinship and association and also a common way of life. We are coastal native people, which means we're whalers. And when you ask what our territory is, what we were taught is our territory extends as far as the whale traveled. And as far as I know, the whale traveled all across the world. So our territory is limitless.
That's a lot of land and water.
That's a lot of land, right? Okay, a lot of water, too. So the point is that what we do are noted for, what Long Island is most noted for, and what Yonkachug is noted for today, is the manufacture of wampum. Wampum is the bead, what they call it, wampeo, is the white clamshell bead that is made from the quahog shell. And Long Island is particularly noted for the quality of its wampum bead. We traded all the way across, all the way to the West Coast with wampum, but the particular color and thickness and quality of the shell made it Long Island made it a particular gift, and we continue to do that today. Shinnecock does it today as well. We do it, and we manufacture with Yonkachug, and Wampum Magic is the largest manufacturer of wampum beads in North America. And we're very proud of that fact. And in fact, we're probably going to be at the Museum of the American Indian is coming to examine our wampum manufacturing process. And we're very proud of the fact that they're going to acknowledge the fact that Long Island is one of the preeminent wampum making areas in the world. So that's one of the things we've been very much noted for, as well as our whaling skills, as well as and what we're doing is making sure that we revive our language and our spiritual way of life is one of the things that we focus on. And we're noted for those things that recognize how powerful our world is and how powerful our nation is. So we are, we're continuing to do those things that ensure our continued economic, cultural, and political survival into the future. And that's what we're noted for.
The when you were describing the wampum, I was saying to myself, I can't wait to see it because it sounds beautiful. And also when you mentioned quahog right away, I'm thinking quahog chowder. So it is lunchtime and you got me going there. A little bit before I bring in Lance, a little bit about your native language. Both you and Shane speak it. I know that as years go by, generations have a tendency sometimes to lose the language, but I have been finding recently over the last few years that I think around the world that there is a push to bring back the heritage and to speak the language again as our parents and grandparents and great-great-parents did a long time ago.
Well, we're learning the language. I'm not fluent the way I want to be, and we're constantly involved in developing the skills in order to be able to speak our language. Our language is sacred, and we are reconnecting to that sacred knowledge that we have there. In fact, Stony Brook University is conducting a Algonquin language initiative there, where they're having people that are teaching Shinnecock, Unkechog, and Mohegan as root languages in Algonquin dialect. So it's a very strong emphasis. You would say like 20, 30 years ago, you would find very few people were able to articulate just this greeting that we introduced ourselves to. But that is a way in which we learn how to reconnect to the language. So very powerful. And we're beginning to, starting in September, it is our mission to bring it into the school district. Like you say, if you bring it to the young people, they have a better understanding. They'll gain a better understanding of who they are as persons. And we're very much encouraged by having the ability to bring that, bring the language to the school district where our kids attend school, and that's the Santa Maria School District. So we're encouraged by that. And the language is, understanding the language is understanding the people, and I'm a firm believer in that, and I'm a firm believer that we must encourage that type of education in order to make all these other things, like what you call rights, but what I call access, having all that access to those things that we've traditionally had access to and continue to fight for that, and understanding that language will be able to provide us with the ability to know why we need to do these things, and we connect with our way of life and the way of life of our ancestors.
Chief Harry Wallace is the chief of the Unkechog Indian Nation. We're going to bring in Lance Gumbs now, who's tribal trustee for the Shinnecock Indian Nation and vice president of the National Congress on American Indians. Lance, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks for your time. First, tell us about the National Congress on American Indians, please. What is it about?
Well, first, let me introduce myself as well. I'm Lance A. Gumbs. I am the current vice chairman of the Shinnecock Indian Nation, and I'm the regional vice president for the National Congress of American Indian, which is the largest Native American organization in the country, dealing with all of the tribes, the 573 federally recognized tribes, and the over 151 state-recognized tribes across the country.
573 federally recognized tribes across the country. Where are the majority of them located? Northeast, southeast? Can you give us a geographic picture?
Alaska has 229 federally recognized tribes. California has the second highest amount, and then it just gradually goes down from there. Ironically, New York State here has 9 tribes. The 8 federal tribes and Chief Wallace's tribe, the state-recognized tribe, the Unkechugs. So New York has an extremely large population, and to go with to couple that, New York City has the largest non-reservation Native American population in the country. New York is very well represented in the numbers and the statistics that go out across Indian country, as we call it.
What is the number one concern for the National Congress on American Indians?
Sovereign rights of tribes. The ability for tribes to self-govern themselves and to have the right to become economically self-sufficient in this day and age. where you know, income and the ability for a tribe to take care of its membership through housing, healthcare, education. Those are the main concerns, and dealing with the administration right now and the budget cuts that are going on. So there are a number of major issues. The Violence Against Women Act, VAWA, which just recently passed and is moving up the chain. So there's a number of things that you know, of major concern. Obviously, the retention of land by tribes, the acquisition or the ability for tribes to acquire additional lands. So, you know, as we move through it, there's basically a number of key objectives that the National Congress deals with. And it trickles down to the same thing that, you know, we're dealing with here on Long Island as tribes, you know, looking at additional lands and trying to maintain the sovereignty of our communities.
Do you need additional lands?
Of course. Every tribe needs additional lands. You know, we're outgrowing the lands that we have here at Shinnecott. I know for a fact Uncutchug is outgrowing their lands. And there's always the need for additional lands for, you know, housing and economic development needs. That's a priority.
We only have a minute left in this segment, but we'll have another 20 minutes when we come back from our break. How much more land are you looking to get?
All of Long Island, if we could get it.
All right. Well, you know, you have modest ambitions, and I could understand that. So you won't give me a number there, will you?
Not at all.
Okay. Lance Gums is with us. He is a tribal trustee, vice chairman for the Shinnecock Indian Nation, vice president of the National Congress on American Indians. Harry Wallace is chief of the Uncutchug Indian Nation, and Chief Wallace is also going to be with us till the end of the program. Shane Weeks has been very patient and is holding on with us. He's a member of the Shinnecock Indian Nation and the founder of Indigenous International. Shane, for those who are listening to this program and they're saying, this is fascinating, how can I get more information? Could you give us a website or something that people can go to now and maybe sign on before the end of the program and join in with us?
Sure. My personal website is bizhiki.com. That's bizhiki.com. You can also follow Indigenous International at Indigenous International, underscore in between the two words, on Instagram, as well as on Facebook.
Shane Weeks is with us, Chief Harry Wallace, Lance Gums. They're going to be with us for another 20 minutes or so. If you would like to join in the conversation, you could email us at tfs@wshu.org. You can join us on Twitter and tweet at FullStoryWSHU and voicemail. Our number, it's always open for you, 833. Call TFS. That's 833-225-5837. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. It's the Full Story on WSHU. I want to take just a moment to tell you about tomorrow's program, which is about the census. It takes place every 10 years, and the federal government goes out and by various methods tries to find out where we are, how many people live in each state and in each area. And there are about 325 million Americans nowadays, give or take a few. And the problem is that when the census takes place, there are many groups which are undercounted, and that affects everything because the number of men and women who serve in the House of Representatives is based on the population. And then for federal dollars, so you pay your taxes, it goes to the federal government, then they figure out what they're going to send back to the individual states. That's based a lot on the population. So if people don't actually answer the census for a variety of reasons, the impact is huge on a region, and it's going to affect New York State. It's going to affect Connecticut, and it affects the conversation that we're having today. And I'm going to ask Chief Harry Wallace of the Okeechobs about this, because, Chief, I was thinking of you a little bit earlier today when I was reading some background material for tomorrow's show. And I believe in the last census, a number that I saw said that that Native Americans were undercounted by around 12%. And that's a scary number.
Well, it's probably larger than that. The reason why is because we don't participate in the census process, because it's always been a weapon used against us. So that we've never had participation in. And in addition to that, the census process is a foreign government process in a lot of Native communities, because they feel that that count is not our count. So there is an effort afoot to try and increase that number, because they do recognize that there is a significant political and economic consequence of the undercount. And but there are some communities that still won't participate in that, or either voluntarily or involuntarily. There is also a process afoot in the states to change the laws to not allow reservation communities who typically don't have street addresses not to be included in the process, including not only the census process, but in the voting process. These are some of the things that we deal with on a constant basis in what Lance would tell you is called Indian country, because this is a constant attack on our ability to govern ourselves and to control the method of in which we raise our children, educate our children, and teach our families. So, the census is just a part of that larger overall picture of attack on our sovereignty as a distinct, independent Native group of people.
I guess I'm trying to understand this a little bit more, and help me if you can, please. So will you actually be participating in the census?
Well, with our community, what they've done is they hired individual members of the Okeechobee Nation in the last census to be able to do that count. And if the government is interested in doing that, in actually getting a more accurate account, they will do that. They will hire people from the community to try and give an accurate account of what those numbers are. And then you'll be able to have more success than you've had in the past. If they don't want to do that, then you will see that those counts will be quite different, quite disparaged.
Huh. Lance Gumbs, can you tell me your reaction to this for the Shinnecock Indian Nation?
Our reaction is very similar to Chief Wallace's, but I agree. The numbers are grossly undercounted. I think that 12% number is a misnomer. I think it's much greater than that. We at the National Congress have a whole program designed for the census, because it affects all of the funding that tribes get as well. So when you were mentioning the funding that states get and towns and counties, it also goes right down to the tribes and the funding capabilities that tribes have based on the count of their tribal members as well for a lot of the federal programs. So it's crucial, and it's something that we take seriously here at Shinnecock to get the numbers counted. But when we looked at the last census, they had definitely miscounted, our community, just based on, the members that we have on our tribal roll versus what they came back and said, was the membership. So it's something that across the country, Indian country is really taking a hard look at, and there's multiple programs now that have been set up to make sure that the census count is a lot more accurate than it has been in the past for Indian communities. But as Chief Wallace stated, there are a lot of Indian communities that don't trust the government and don't want to participate in anything that the government is doing, and there's a real fear factor there, and that stems from the historic trauma that you know, we as Indian people have, you know, based on the history of this country and what has transpired. So there's a number of factors that play into this.
Shane Weeks, what can the federal government do? What can those in charge do to, I don't want to say grease the skids, that's the wrong term, but to make relations better and to get rid of that mistrust?
I agree with Chief Harry also, is that let us do our own census, you know, because in the past, the census has been weaponized against us. In certain tribes, there have been blood quantums imposed on tribes to determine membership. And for us, as sovereign nations, we have our own stipulations of how we authorize and recognize tribal members. So if they would recognize us as sovereign people, and that they can understand that we have our own government systems and are able to take care of ourselves, then I think that trust would be a little bit more stable.
In this current political climate, are you hopeful that that will happen?
You know, for us as Indigenous people, the political climate has always been turmoil. Huh. You know, that's nothing new for us.
So there's nothing new under the sun here, huh?
No, this is nothing new. You know, we've always had to fight for who we are as a people. And what I am hopeful is that there are a lot of people within our own communities that are taking up the battle. You know, and our force is getting larger and larger to be able to carry this fight on. That's what I am hopeful for.
Chief Wallace, I think I heard you in the background there before. Do you want to jump in?
Oh, well, both feet. I'm not a Republican and not a Democrat. I'm a North American, and our people fought in every war in this country since the French and Indian War, as you said, 1754. We had an Uncotchog Indian who died on the USS Constitution in the War of 1812. We represent more, and as a group of people, we've represented more in the military than any other ethnic or cultural group in this country. And the reason why that is because whether or not we occupy this land, we believe we possess it. And because we possess it, we are bound by our responsibilities to our ancestors to defend it. And that's what we do. The governments that you've established, we can tell you from every single governmental representative, every presidential individual, the kinds of abuses that we've had to endure under their administration. So this is just the latest one. And, it didn't happen in a vacuum. There had to be a concept of buildup of things that you're dealing with here. It didn't just happen all at once. It occurred through a process. And we understand that there's difficulties in different administrations, but it's a constant battle for us. It never ends. Every day, our rights and our access has to be defended. When we go to fish, our rights and our access have to be defended because there are challenges every day. If we win one today, there'll be another one tomorrow. So we constantly have to endure the process of what's called the domination of discovery concept that exists in North America, predating the fallacy that Columbus discovered America. And because of that concept that we were not here, we were not real people because it was not controlled by a Christian deity or a Christian king or queen, that our lives were insignificant. And so there was an open land and a vacant territory that Europe came and conquered. Well, we constantly deal with that kind of concept on an ongoing basis, on a day-to-day basis, because our rights are not recognized as rights because they're not recognized and because they were abrogated either by force or by sale or by force of will of the government. So what we're saying here is that, this is nothing new to us. This is 500 years of conflict and struggle And we'll continue to do that. The reason why we'll continue to do that is because we'll continue to be here. And so long as we're here, we'll be fighting.
We've got about 7 minutes left in our program, and I know we've talked about many of the issues that are troubling to you and some of the issues that you would like to see fixed or are concerned about for the future, but I'd love to end with some positive notes, things about your tribes, about the reservations, about your futures that maybe you could talk about for a little bit for a few minutes. Lance Gumbs, I'd love to start with you. Once again, you're vice chairman for the Shinnecock Indian Nation, vice president of the National Congress on American Indians. What would you like the listeners to know and to leave them with a bit of encouragement?
You know, I think that it's important for everyone to understand that we are still here. Like Chief Wallace said, you know, we are in this constant struggle, but we're not giving up. You know, we have, when you look at Indian people, I mean, we didn't get citizenship in our own land here until 1924. So when you look at that and you look at where we've, you know, managed to come from and to survive, and then, you know, where Shinnecock is right here, we're probably in one of the richest communities in America. And to have been able to survive for this amount of time and to continue to move forward with our language, with our housing, with our education, with our health, you know, our health facilities, the things that we're doing, we, you know, will be here. We will continue to exist. And I think it's important that, you know, when people look at Native people, you know, because clearly in this country, we are the forgotten people, you know, and that's one of the things that always has disturbed me, you know, is people always say, well, oh, are there any Indians left, or are there really Indians left on, you know, the east end of Long Island, you know? Well, that's the Hamptons. That's Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Yes, it is, and we're smack dead in the middle of it, and we have managed to survive. We have managed to survive all of the genocidal tactics that have happened, the smallpox blankets that we were given, the diseases and things, and we're still here. And that in itself says a lot, you know, about the resilience of our people, about the awareness of our people, you know, when we're talking about language and maintaining our language. You know, we are of the land. We are people of the land. We are people of the shore. You know, the sea was our sustenance, and we have managed to continue all of that. We grow oysters here in our community. Probably grow some of the best oysters, you know, in the country right here. We are developing the nation's lands for future use.
Lance, I only have 10 more seconds for you because then I have to move on to Chief Wallace. But final thoughts, please. All right.
We're here.
Super. Chief Harry Wallace, final thoughts, please, sir.
Well, I believe that through education, we'll be able to accomplish more positive results. I am encouraged that the school administration is coming to an understanding that in order to teach history of Long Island, you have to teach the history of the Native people. And the history of the Native people encompasses a whole number of things, not just relations between Indians and non-Indians, but between the understanding of a way of life, the understanding of a language, the understanding of an economy, how things were done. And to know that if you really want to understand how to protect the environment, you really need to talk to those people who protected the environment, you know, because the culture that came here was not really interested in protecting our environment, but certainly interested in exploiting it. So there's a difference between exploitation and protection, and understanding how we did things and learning how we did things is an understanding of how we can protect our lives into the future. And so the Native people are those people who are going to be your protectors. And the sooner you realize that, the better off that this country is going to be. And that's my final word. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your program.
Thank you, Chief. Anytime. Shane Weeks, you're going to get the final word, sir.
I'd just like to say that I find hope in the fact that the outside communities are reaching out And it's something that's very recent, you know, and that we're able to express ourselves as Indigenous people to the fullest, which wasn't something that we could do all the way as soon as the 90s, you know, and we weren't allowed to speak our languages and practice our heritage publicly. And so that's something that our ancestors and people that are still alive were deprived of. And so to be able to do that and to be able to have people there to listen to us, I think is a great step forward for people in general, you know, humanity.
It sounds like you're hopeful for the future.
I am.
With the final minute that we have left, how do we study about the Shinnecocks? How do we study about the tribes? What's the best way?
The best way is to reach out to somebody from those nations and ask them to come do a presentation and talk about who we are from our own perspective. I think that's the best way.
That's a great suggestion. So you're saying schools, for instance, if a teacher is listening to this, he or she could reach out to someone like you and ask for you to come to the school.
Yes, without a doubt. I've done presentations at many organizations with Harry Wallace here. We've done many presentations all over the island, all over the country, many different places. So it's definitely something we're open to and encourage people to reach out to people from our communities to do that.
Shane Weeks, who is a member of the Shinnecock Indian Nation, founder of Indigenous International, Chief Harry Wallace is the chief of the Yonkachuk Indian Nation, and Lance Gums is a tribal trustee, vice chairman for the Shinnecock Indian Nation, and vice president of the National Congress on American Indians. Chief, Lance, Shane, thank you. It was a pleasure. I learned a lot today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time. That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.